Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that aims to mine a few nuggets that can support us in transforming our well-being as we choose to live in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature. I know that can seem counterintuitive, like a nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Thank you so much for joining me. I have another very special guest to introduce you to today. She's a best-selling author, mindset and energy coach, and a former Miss Universe. She has a huge audience around the world, and her name is Natalie Glebova. Natalie's latest book is called Temple of Love, A Pilgrimage of the Heart. It's a powerful parable that takes readers on an exhilarating quest that enables them to look inwards and rediscover their faith in unseen powers. It's more than just another personal development book. It's a spiritual guide full of relatable stories, struggles, and practical tools for healing yourself so that you can get to a place of total self-love and self-acceptance. So you can imagine that I was delighted to meet Natalie and have the opportunity to talk to her about her book and her work. Here's how we got started. Temple of Love. This is all about how to heal the heart, really. But I was curious to see how you started off on this journey. Your book is a journey and it's a reflection of your journey in life. Tell us what the catalyst was for this book.
The catalyst. I think the catalyst was simply wanting to explore my patterns and wanting to explore and understand why I have been doing the things I've been doing in relationships and work and life, making the same mistakes over and over again. And I think Carl Jung said it, you know, the subconscious will keep running the show until we make the subconscious conscious.
Yeah.
And we'll be running the show and we'll call it fate. I think Carl Jung was quoted to say that, not in exactly those words, but I think I'm paraphrasing it. And so I really wanted to understand what was it that were causing those some patterns, some loops that I couldn't seem to get out of. And I wanted to explore the relationship that I had to myself. And having had my own experiences with plant medicines and shadow work, years of yoga, some therapy and some understanding of psychology and how the psyche works, I really wanted to put it all together and create a story that would be interesting to read, for the reader to go on a journey. And instead of having kind of like all of these concepts in a dry, hard to digest way, I wanted to make it into an exciting story, an adventure, a pilgrimage. And I always loved books like Celestine Prophecy, The Alchemist, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, just to name a few. And I love that element. It's a self-help book, and yet there's that element of fiction and that element of storytelling. And this is why I wanted to write it. I felt like up to that point in my life, I had already gathered enough experiences and enough content to be able to turn it into an interesting story. And so off I went and created Temple of Love.
Absolutely. And your story, of course, former Miss Universe, you know, that's quite an achievement. So it's not like you were just kicking your heels thinking, oh, you know, I've got a terrible life, because you had achievements. You'd made, you know, you'd become Miss Universe. That's something quite extraordinary. Not many people can say that, right? But there was still, you were still going through a lot of things, you know, the patterns repeating. I get that completely. And I may say, you know, the Celestine Prophecy, The Alchemist, you know, all of these books, I mean, they've touched so many people, including me as well. And they are fantastic. And it is brilliant if you can weave this wisdom into a story, which you have done beautifully, absolutely beautifully. And you talk about a lot of different healing modalities or a lot of different things that people might try. And you talk about your experiences of them. Now, right off the bat in the book, you talk about plant medicine and your experiences with that. Tell us about the plant medicine side. Now, understanding that in some countries, some of these things aren't even legal, but you tell the story. Tell the story of you how you experienced plant medicine.
Well, when you do go to Peru, it's definitely considered that it's legal for the shamanic purposes, and it has been there for so many generations that it's part of the history, it's part of the culture in a lot of the tribes and a lot of the places in Peru. And so I actually didn't do it in Peru, but I've always wanted to. And I experienced it as a result of kind of reaching a dead end point in my self-development journey where I felt like I had tried everything else and I've come to that. Maybe I've hit a plateau. It wasn't maybe necessarily a dead end, but I've hit a plateau where I really just couldn't go beyond comprehending some of these spiritual concepts without experiencing them firsthand. And it's really difficult to experience some of these metaphysical concepts and realities when you are not in an altered state of consciousness. And so I thought, okay, well, here's this route to take. And it's one of the routes to take. Of course, there's tons of other opportunities that you can do going into different types of meditation, tantra, the yogic route, the Buddhist route. And I've been living in Asia, so all of these things are available. But unless you go to the temple or an ashram somewhere in India or a Buddhist temple somewhere in Thailand and spend years and years studying under these monks and some of these teachers, I feel like you really cannot integrate all of those incredible teachings into a modern day busy life while you're struggling to raise kids and make money and make a career and a bunch of other things that we're all trying to do in our modern day lives. And so I figured that this is perhaps, some people will call it a shortcut, and they might be right, but it is a way. It is one of the ways. So I figured if there is a way, I'm going to take that way. And so I explored ayahuasca in a beautiful shamanic setting, and it was a really profound journey where I had ask the question, and the intention that I went in with was to please give me confirmation that physical reality is not all there is that there's something beyond what we can see or beyond what we can sense with our senses. And I've always considered myself kind of like a left brain person, very logical, pragmatic, not necessarily creative. And I think my creativity had been stifled a lot. So again, I've just been kind of listening to all of this spiritual teachings and understanding it logically with the brain, but not experiencing it myself firsthand. And so, with ayahuasca experience, I definitely got that confirmation that I was looking for. And that was actually enough for me because I feel like a lot of these psychoactive ingredients that are found in plants or in general, any kind of ethnogenic substances. What I like about them is that they set a benchmark for what can be achieved. The state of oneness, the state of unconditional love, the state of compassion and seeing things from other people's perspective and understanding the truth is only, there's one truth, but there's so many ways that we can look at it and so many ways that we can perceive the one truth. And so I truly believe that with once you understand what is possible, then in your own journey, whichever journey and path you choose to take, whether it is through meditation or breath work or other modalities, you already know what to shoot for, what to look for, what you're aiming to get to. And so this ayahuasca experience really has given me a beautiful, profound understanding of reality and of life as it could be. And as I think, as it should be, with all of the connectedness that we can feel to nature and to all the other people around us. And it kind of set me off, continued on that trajectory. Because remember, I said I reached the plateau. And so off I went the upward trajectory to continue deepening my spirituality and understanding and expansion of consciousness and so on.
Wow, yeah. And are you in the book? Because the book isn't totally autobiographical. I mean, you kind of you've hooked a story onto some of your life experiences, basically. I think it's probably one way of describing it. And the you in the book wanted confirmation that you needed to open your heart, you needed to heal your heart. And so that's the premise of the book. And you got that confirmation from that ayahuasca experience. Yeah. And so your journey continued, because this is right at the beginning. So, and you bring in all kinds of things, and I love that, because healing or spirituality or whatever you want to call it, it's not just a, I don't see it as just a one thing, right? I don't see it as just okay, well, I practice sacred geometry in my life, so that's all I need. I don't see it like that at all. And what I loved about this book was that you look at all these different aspects of ways of finding our way back to balance, and and our own true being. So, but talk us through some of the things. I mean, for instance, I mentioned sacred geometry. You talk about symbols. You talk about, well, a whole load of a whole yoga, meditation, a whole load of things. So let's just go through a few things that you might use in your coaching work, for instance. So, but I am anyway, because this is just me, interested and curious about the use of symbols, because I think they are hugely potent, and also the sacred geometry. So maybe we can start there.
Well, that's a really good place to start. In fact, I have here on my altar, I'm sitting right in front of my altar where I have certain objects, some from religious spaces like an icon or a Ganesh statue or a Buddha statue. But one of the items that I have is a pyramid like this. And so this acts as a symbol for me of the Temple of Love, which is
Ah, very nice.
what the protagonist in the story, she's searching for the Temple of Love. Because it promises true love to the person who pilgrims there. And the pyramid, yeah, the temple is actually a pyramid like this. And I use sacred geometry in the sense that there's a message of love, of self-love encoded into the structure of this pyramid. And
Lovely.
when you read the story, it becomes sort of like, okay, what are we going to find at the end? What is encoded into the pyramid? And of course, it's pretty almost self-explanatory that the person looking for the Temple of Love and looking for love from the outside ends up finding that the love and the Temple of Love that needs to be built is inside, right?
Beautiful. And may I just say, for people who are just listening, this is a beautiful pink colored pyramid as well. So there's a lovely pink band going around it. Yeah, fantastic. So that's a very heart-centered color.
Right. And so we know that the pyramid is a very sacred shape in history and cultures, and cultures from all around the world. That's the reason why the pyramids in Egypt and pyramids in the Mayan era as well. And actually, pyramids all around the world have been
Yeah.
built in that shape because there is something very sacred about it. And if you decode it and actually ask why, because it actually represents the ascension, right? So you have kind of like the apex of the pyramid at the top that represents ascension of your consciousness to the higher realms. And so I wanted to use this shape, the shape of the pyramid, because it is quite important and carries great significance. And I decided to use it to have a message of self-love and self-transformation encoded into it. And you will find out what it is when you read the book. It's called The Three Cornerstones of Self-Love, signifying the three points of, on the front face of the pyramid, and then the four cornerstones of self-transformation, the four steps that are represented by the base of the pyramid. So I thought that would be a fun way to include into the story because again there are elements even of fantasy there. I have spirit animal guide, a snake that appears in the visions, of the protagonist, and she carries messages from the beyond, from the other
Snakes do
realm.
that. Snakes do that. I've had visions of snakes. Yeah. They have a lot of wisdom when you see them in that kind of situation. Yeah.
They do, and in fact, they're in, for example, in Southeast Asian folklore, there is a race of demigods called Naga, like Nagis.
Yes. Yes.
So Naga is a demigod, snake that can turn into human form, and they have, wonderful magical qualities. So I thought that it would be really nice to include a bit of that mysticism, mythology, and Eastern philosophy as well, because I resonate a lot with Vedic philosophies and yogic principles. So I feel like that is a beautiful path to take when you're searching for truth and when you're searching for love.
Yes, snakes. Snakes have carried many messages to me from my ancestors, particularly, especially when I've been tuning into certain venerable old trees. I remember holding a branch of the 5,000-year-old yew tree in Glen Lyon here in Scotland and getting a very distinct vision of a snake sliding up the tree to pass on some important information. It really is fascinating, and there is more to come after we take a short break. Because it's time now to hear from our fabulous station sponsors. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, author, mindset and energy coach, and former Miss Universe, Natalie Glebova. Before the break, we got a real insight into the richness of her latest book. We also heard about the three cornerstones of self-love and the four cornerstones of transformation. So I asked Natalie to expand on that, starting with the self-love piece. Here's Natalie again.
Well, without giving away too much.
I know, you don't want to ruin, no spoilers particularly, but it would be good to hear what you have to say on that.
Well, definitely everything begins with self-awareness. And this is, I think, such a big cornerstone and such a big element of loving yourself on the deepest essence of who you are. Because if you don't understand who you are on the deeper essence, beyond the mask that you wear, beyond the identifying, words and ideas and concepts that you can say about yourself, if you don't know who you are on the essence, how can you ever fully love yourself? So self-awareness truly is what you begin with. And again, that's why I think plant medicines can play such an important role, because they can maybe hopefully uncover for you that your body and your mind is not all that there is. And maybe that there's something a little bit deeper, or a lot deeper, something that is so infinite and vast and transcends all time and space and everything that we can imagine in our 3D world, that is your essence, your soul, the energy that gets carried onwards forever and ever. And again, these are just concepts and beliefs, but I think if you can experience in an altered state of consciousness or not, that true essence of who you are, which is peace, love, and joy, and this expansive depth, then how can you not love yourself? How can you not value yourself and revere yourself as an image of the divine? Because on that essence, we are all made in the image of the divine.
And ultimately, that comes down to opening up your heart to receive and to give.
Most definitely. And that's why the journey in Temple of Love takes the reader on a journey through healing the chakras, all the way from the root chakra up towards the crown, connecting obviously with the higher consciousness. But in that process, we pause at the heart and we open up the heart to allow unconditional love to really enter and understand that we are unconditional love. And how can we connect with all the people through the heart on that essence of who we are? Because if you know who you are on your essence, you will know that you're no different from anybody else. And you'll understand that. And once you understand that, how can you not love everybody else? Right?
And I think people don't tend to understand the meaning of unconditional love. I think it's very misunderstood at the moment, and well, maybe has always been. And that's something that we've always had to learn. People say, well, if you have children, then you understand unconditional love. But then that's towards your children. But what about towards yourself? Do we really love ourselves unconditionally? What do you think?
And that's the key point that you say here. I agree with you. Until you learn to love every single part of yourself, including the shadows, including the broken bits, including the things that you might not consider so holy and so savory, right? Because we are all flawed individuals in some ways, because that's part of being human. We live in a third dimensional reality where there's duality to everything, right? We couldn't be saints living on this planet, because as humans, we have to experience that duality. And so, integrating every part of yourself, no matter how dark you might think it is, of course, we can strive to be the best people that we can. But understanding our own shadow and integrating it and saying that, you know what, it's part of who I am. I accept it. I nurture it. I don't reject it. And I forgive myself for all of the mistakes that I have made while striving to be a better and better, better human being. And that's what true unconditional love for the self really means.
And yes, not rejecting anything, but then, looking at everything with a, with an objective eye and saying, well, actually, I don't like this, but maybe I can, I get it. I accept that's where I am, but how can I move on? How can I move into something else that might serve me better or, serve others better? But I think we get stuck in this notion that we are just what we are and there's nothing you can do about it. But it's
It's
not
true.
about rejecting those parts of you that you don't like. It's about accepting them and saying, okay, but then maybe I can do better. What do you
Yeah,
think?
absolutely. Of course, we can do better. And there's things that I can say in my own life. I look back at it and I think, oh my God, I could have handled that a lot better, or I
Oh
shouldn't
yeah, we've
have
all got those.
said that. And then if I dwell on those things, or if I somehow make an identity for myself from those mistakes, that's really rejecting those parts. But if I integrate them and I say, you know what? That's just part of being a human being. And I honor and accept the path that I'm on. I hold those parts and I embrace them instead of saying, I hate it, because those parts that we reject if we hate them and we don't send them unconditional love, they will just keep growing and becoming bigger and worse, because all parts of ourselves actually need love.
Yeah,
Right?
yeah. It's a truism that what you focus on grows, isn't it? And if you are focusing on hating something, then that hate and everything just grows and grows and grows. Whereas if we can open our hearts and allow ourselves to love those parts, even those parts that we really don't like, then we can move forward. And my cat, well, not my cat, my foster cat's just joining me now. She's
Oh, good.
if you can hear her, you might not be able to, hopefully, but she might jump on to any given moment. But
Love
that's fine.
that, you know
yeah,
what's
well,
a you know what what's a really good practice that I find for myself when I'm faced with some of my darkness and some of my shadows? I had recently gone through something very traumatic, and I blamed myself and I berated myself and I, almost hated myself for certain things that I have done. And the practice that helped me was really to see myself as a child that still lives within me, and looking into her eyes and saying that you have only acted in the ways that you were capable of at
yeah.
your level of awareness and ability and capacity.
Yeah.
And as a child, you have experienced certain traumas and certain conditioning and certain confusions about what love actually means and how relationships are and how, to be in this world, how to survive in this world. And we all, as children, we come as innocent, right? And we are unconditional, pure love. So, because when we look at the eyes of a child, what do you see? You just see innocence and purity and light and love. Well, that's still within us. That didn't go away. That inner child is still within us, and that purity and stillness and light and love is still inside. And in Temple of Love, I actually have a passage where she drives in a car, and she sees the poverty around her, I think in Guatemala, and she sees some people, some adults, and she had just come from an orphanage where she connected so much with the children. And she's seeing the same eyes that she saw in the children in the people on the street, and realizing that those children are still inside those adults. And why all of a sudden we can judge the adults and say, oh, he's bad, or she's this and she's that. But where did that innocence and that beauty and that preciousness go? It never went anywhere. And so we can look at ourselves and imagine ourselves as children, as a child, and see that innocence in the eyes, and just hold the child and say, you're doing the best that you can with all the things that you have at your disposal, however the best you can.
It's absolutely true. I love that. And, I trained in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And one of the presuppositions of NLP is that we always are acting in our own best interest. In other words, so there's always a positive intention. No matter how heinous the action might be, there's always underlying that a positive intention. So it's the actions are actions. What prompts the actions is something else entirely. So, even something which harms might have a positive intention on the part of the person who's doing that. So
Right.
I think that's true. We are all innocent at heart, getting back to the heart again. It's just how we express ourselves and express all the things which are shadows within us. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. And I
Caused
love that.
by traumas and caused by
Absolutely. Yeah.
certain conditioning that we grew up witnessing.
Absolutely. And so clearing that as well, clearing those traumas and all of those things that are lodged in our body as well. That's the other thing, isn't it? That we need to get rid of. And just, getting back to, I'm obsessing on the sacred geometry here today. I don't know why quite, but anyway,
Love
getting back to the sacred geometry. So people might say, well, I kind of get it. I kind of understand what that is, but how does that help me become more me? How does that help me become well? How does that help me get over all these traumas and these other things in my life?
it.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you mentioned about symbols. and how symbols play such an important role in healing, in manifesting, in many, many things having to do with our personal development and spiritual development. And I use symbols all the time. I use numbers as symbols, right? So obviously, there's a reason why people are always drawn to repeating number sequences like 1111 or 222 or whichever ones that they see on the clock sometimes or somewhere. And we might not know entirely what those numbers mean, although if you go on Google or ask ChatGPT, I'm sure it's going to give you a bunch of explanation of what each one of the repeating sequences are. But my point in Temple of Love actually is that we can use symbols and numbers as almost like a placebo effect. Because when you believe that a certain symbol or a certain number or a certain synchronistic event or an animal, right, that appears out of nowhere brings us good luck or brings us protection or brings us good health or whatever it is, or even just like, wearing a special pendant or getting a tattoo on your hand. If you believe that that symbol is bringing you power, it's not the actual symbol that does it. It's the power of your mind that does it, right? So without that belief, it wouldn't actually work.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So in a way, we're using these symbols kind of as reminders. And this is why I have an altar and why I have a lot of these sacred objects in there, like crystals. And, I have kind of like the, I'll show you a couple of other things, like a grandma and a grandpa.
Oh, you have,
These are symbols for my ancestors and my soul family that are always with me on the journey here on Earth. And so I feel like surrounding your life with symbols and beautiful numbers and beautiful things like flowers and crystals is just a reminder and gives kind of like it's a doorway, right? For you to remember who you are on the inside, your infinite power, your divinity, and your true essence, which is love, peace, and joy. And these symbols can really work wonders in helping us protect and heal and provide abundance and whatever it is that we want, because our minds are that powerful.
Oh, yes, our minds are really powerful. They're keys to unlocking the true essence of our being, which in itself is pretty powerful. Well, we'll hear more on that in a minute or two because it's time to take another short break right now. I'll be back with more from Natalie Glebova as soon as we've heard once again from our station sponsors.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on the world's number one award-winning talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and with me is the author, mindset and energy coach, and former Miss Universe, let's not forget that, Natalie Glebova. Now, as Natalie was talking about the power of our minds just before the break, something popped into my mind about this. Now, let me explain. I don't know why, but while you were talking, what was going through my mind is you know, the whole idea of magic. And can magic really work if you don't believe in it? Looking at voodoo, for instance, does voodoo really work if you don't believe, if you don't buy into it? Mm-hmm. Can it really work?
It doesn't work because what we believe creates our reality.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that's all it really is. And yeah. If a symbol or an object can help us make that belief stronger, then yes, in that sense, it works. Yeah. But it's not actually the object. It's your belief system. It's your own mind that's making the magic happen.
Because magic does happen,
yes, it
does. I think. You know, I've got a thing behind me saying, trust your magic, but a legend on a painting there. But yes, it happens if you believe and commit and are fully focused on it. So it comes back to what we were saying before about focusing on the negative or focusing on the issues. Okay, just accept them and then move on. What you want to focus on is what's going to help you be well and, and you know, achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Well,
you know, a famous example from Carl Jung, and I actually talk about it in Temple of Love, that he based a big part of his work on symbols as well. And he even coined the term synchronicity as mystical coincidences that happen and that help us. And in one of his examples, in one of his books, he talks about a patient that was resisting treatment. She had been having recurring dreams and, you know, paranoia, and I'm not sure exactly what the problem was, but in a lot of her dreams, she saw a scarab beetle, you know, those Egyptian scarabs.
Yeah.
And so in one of their treatments together, in one of the sessions together, they were sitting in his office and he heard a tapping outside his window, and he looked and there was a giant beetle outside the window tapping on glass. And so he pointed to it and said to the patient, he said, well, there's the beetle from your dream. And so he kind of made that connection of a very interesting mystical coincidence between her telling the dream and the beetle being outside the window. And guess what happened? She took that as a divine intervention and started to respond immediately to his treatment and improved in all of the problems that she was having, because that belief that something out there is watching over her, or something out there sending her messages. And that's a really great belief, isn't it? That we're not alone, that we have help from the outside, that we have a soul family or angels or spiritual guides to help us, right?
It is. It is. And it does help a lot of people. And I think all of that is great, but I personally tend to remind people that you are powerful yourself. You know, we are all infinitely powerful. And if, you know, yes, a helping hand is great, but, you know, we can get to a point where we are really all powerful. I truly believe that, actually. And, but, you know, we have to go through these steps. Many of us have to go through so much in life if we're ever going to get there. And some of us don't get there, which is unfortunate. But
Why we need help here and there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, we all need help. So so that is fantastic. And I think there's a power in storytelling, which you've obviously tapped into. How did it feel? I'm curious. How did it feel writing this book? Was that empowering?
It was. In fact, it felt like as I was writing about healing each chakra at a time, and with each chapter that I wrote, which corresponded to one of the chakras, I felt like I was going through the healing myself. Yeah. And I was experiencing certain things, like even physically, I was experiencing certain things when I was writing about it. And it didn't stop when I finished. It continued to evolve, and my journey continued of growth continued. I'm still, I think, in the process of building my temple of love, going back to myself, and what I wrote about even before it happened, I already experienced it, and then I actually experienced some of the things that I wrote about. Like, for example, one of the things that I wrote about was having an emotional catharsis, just like breaking down in the middle of an ecstatic dance because I didn't really understand who I was, and I started judging all the people and I started judging myself. And so when I was writing about it, I didn't even know where that came from. But then a year later, I traveled to Guatemala and I attended an ecstatic dance. And that exact same thing happened to me as I was on the dance floor, releasing my emotions and all of that. And it was just incredible to see that, wow, this is a journey that keeps on happening over and over again. We're never truly done, right? So I think writing that book helped me to understand that I can continue going through these transformative experiences without fear or without apprehension and thinking, what is wrong with me, right? Because it's all part of the process. So I know that if I have a breakdown, it's okay because something is releasing, something is shifting. I'm moving on to the next stage.
Yeah, and we're not broken. We just need to, release some of the issues that are getting in our way.
Because if you don't release them, they're either going to be mental blockages, psychological problems, or physiological problems.
Yeah,
One way
absolutely.
or another. I
One
mean, it
way or
has
another, they get you. We're nearing the end now. I could talk to you for a long, long time about this, but it is wonderful. Now, if I mean, obviously, we recommend that people read your book because it is great. And so, if you are coaching somebody, for instance, where do you start? How do you start this process? So, if we're talking about healing the heart, we're talking about opening the heart, we're talking about getting to that point of unconditional love for self. What's the first step?
For me, the first step is always the mind, actually, because I truly believe in the hermetic principles of everything is mind, which is the first one. Because nothing else is going to happen unless you set an intention. That clear intention and that vision for where you want to be. And so for me, I always start with the mindset and observing, teaching people how to observe the thoughts, how to observe what's happening in the mind, how to differentiate between experiencing the present moment and being trapped in thoughts of the past or worries of the future. So coming back into the present moment, connecting to the body and the breath, that's my yogic background, obviously. I love teaching that whole body-breath connection because that is, again, the doorway to the present moment and to the truth of who you are. And only then, after we've done setting those intentions and understanding how everything in the mind creates your reality, then we go into the heart. And that's when we start traveling inwards. And taking that pilgrimage to the heart to understand who am I on my core essence, beyond everything else, even beyond the mind, beyond what the mind can think.
Yeah, that's so important. Really is so important. And it's a lovely message. And unfortunately, a message we have to end on. However, before we do go, please tell everybody where they can find you. Do you have a website? The book is available at all good book places, and I'm sure online. It is Temple of Love, a pilgrimage to the heart. Tell people where they can get in touch with you or find out more about you.
Certainly, Temple of Love, as you mentioned, is available on all those online book retailers, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. I'm sure a bunch of other ones. You can go check out my website, natalieglebova.com, where you can find some of my coaching courses, which I'm in the process of rebranding a little bit, but I am really excited about introducing some really interesting courses and mentorship packages about inner beauty, because
Lovely.
I'm shifting from outer beauty to inner beauty. You know, I've reached the heights of outer beauty, but now it's time to go inwards and really discover what does it truly take to crown your inner beauty queen. And I'm on Instagram and other social media. Just type my name, Natalie Glubova, and you'll find me right there.
That's perfect. I like that. Going from outer beauty to inner beauty. Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. I do love it. And and you work with people remotely, I presume, because you're living in the East now, aren't you? Where?
I do. I live in Thailand.
You live in Thailand, exactly. So, time differences notwithstanding, you are available to work with people remotely. So that's
absolutely. And most of my clients are in Canada and the US or UK as well.
Yeah.
So it's always so such a pleasure to connect with people all around the world, and time zone is no issue.
I agree. I agree with that. And it's been beautiful connecting with you today. So thank you so much for your time and your wisdom.
Oh, that's really sweet. And I appreciate everything that you do and facilitating the space for everyone who comes on to share bits and, you know, little bits of their lives. Thank you so much, JJ.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Natalie Glubova there. Her latest book, again, is called Temple of Love, A Pilgrimage of the Heart. And I must say, I loved it, so do check it out. I recommend it. I also love the sound of what Natalie's going to be doing next. So again, make sure you follow what she's up to, because I have no doubt that it will be wonderful. Her website, again, is natalieglubova.com. So very simple. And that just about brings us to the end of today's show. As ever, you can find out more about me at thepracticalalchemist.uk. Links to everything that I'm up to can be found there, including links to all my socials and YouTube channel. I'm a bit quiet on all social media lately, but if you follow me, you'll be hearing some exciting announcements very soon. Our podcast on tocophobia, called Tick-Tocophobia, is still going strong. The podcast I do with Alexia Leachman, that is. She's the world's foremost tocophobia expert. Now, tocophobia is commonly defined as a deep fear of pregnancy and childbirth, but it is so much more than that. It's a major anxiety disorder, and Alexia and I have both had it and recovered from it. And we talk about our different experiences on our podcast. We also talk to other experts and other people who've had tocophobia. You'll find us wherever you listen to your podcasts, as well as on our YouTube channel called Tick-Tocophobia and at tick-tocophobia.com. When you tune in, you'll learn all about the signs that show that you or someone you might know have it and how to deal with that. And if you know anybody who might benefit from listening to the podcast, please share it with them. And that pretty much wraps up today's show. I thank you all for listening. I really do appreciate you all. Join me next time for more great guests, more information, and more practical alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.